Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion.
We'll never finish if we don't start. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Indie Invasion. I am here with the amazing, the stunning, the powerful,
the
long-haul driving Huffman worldwide. Right. Freshly back from North Carolina, where we have both recently returned from the Mid-Atlantic Convention Expo, also known as MACE Convention.
We are
ready to banter. That's right. You are hardcore. Say hello, Eric. Say hello.
Hello. Hello, right. Everybody. I'm back. I survived my long, lonely road trip that I took.
I will say that my favorite part about your entire trip, since I have been ragging you for so long to move out of that freezing state of yours down here where it's nice and warm, is that when you messaged me or you texted me the picture of the thermometer in your car, while I was headed home with the sunroof open on my Jeep, it was 36 where you were.
Yeah, that was about, that was probably about 8:30 at night. I was just going around O'Hare Airport in the Chicago area, and I just happened to look down at my dash. And yeah, I saw that it was 36 or something.
It was 36. Like 36.
And I thought it was funny. Boy, when I left this morning at 8 o'clock, it was 61.
Was it that cold?
So yeah, that's what it was. Well, it was early morning, so it's still an early morning chill.
And it was North Carolina, not South Carolina. So it was a little farther north. So a little bit farther north. Well, what have you been working on lately, Eric? What's been going on in the brief time that you've been home?
Well, we were just kind of bantering before we hit the record about all our different sets of miniatures we got for different games. And I'm just looking over at my shelf of half-painted models, whether it's Burrows and Badgers, and I got a bunch of Twisted and Twilight and a lot of this and that, trying to finish up models. I've had a hard time lately concentrating on, let's get these models done. And then I keep starting projects. That's my problem. I have
wait a minute. I cannot possibly see how you have that kind of problem when we do a podcast that focuses on new independent games every week.
Yeah.
How could you possibly have a problem?
See my phone. I have all these different websites open and stuff in carts just waiting for me to press buttons.
And then of course, Black Friday sales coming up.
Getting me this week, man.
Yeah.
That's really getting me. I mean, there's good sales at Hero Forge if you guys like designing your own minis, which, if you've heard us talk about Hero Forge before, so I like going on there and designing minis. I have like some D&D minis that cut, because I've been trying to find minis for me and the wife that are our characters. I can't find anything that I really like, and that's what I love about Hero Forge. You can make it how you want.
It was a brilliant business.
Yeah. I mean, it's not cheap. It can be a little pricey, but you get something that only you have. So I have models on there just waiting for me to order.
Especially since it's more targeted towards the RPG community.
Yes.
And let's be honest, how many models do you need to buy when you're the player? Maybe one or two because your character died one time. So
yeah, and you have a backup character.
Yeah, so it's not bad as far as having to make a larger investment. And the truth is, I think we've touched on this before too. I've heard people complain about the prices of GW models, but when you really look at the pricing of a lot of the independent companies that we purchase stuff from, it's not that much different.
No.
I mean, the prices across the board are generally pretty close. And the fact remains is, much like my younger days when I had another hobby that, believe it or not, was more expensive than this one, which was my Harley. And HD stands for $100, man. You can't buy anything with a Harley symbol on it. It's not $100. But it's the same thing. You're paying for what you want. It's
yeah.
It's you're your hobby.
For hobbies are supposed to be enjoyable,
right?
So you know you can't really look at the price tag for your hobbies because you want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And when you start kind of doing that nickel and diming stuff, well, then how enjoyable really is it?
Yeah. We are not encouraging financial irresponsibility here.
No. 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 We're encouraging you to enjoy it though.
Yes.
Because you know, interest change, markets change, you know, you never know, you know, the way life goes sometimes, and life is short. You got to enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what we do as well. We try to anyway. When we glance at the pile of shame every so often, sometimes you don't feel like you're enjoying yourself.
I kind of think sometimes that's why I moved upstairs here, because usually my work area was in the basement.
Did you run from your pile of shame?
I'm kind of thinking that, but you know what? My pile of shame is following me because it's growing up here in this room now.
I think that's why I have the shelves in my game room that I have, is because I have all my painted models displayed. So it's a little bit of an encouragement. I think I am almost at the tipping point where I have more models painted than I have unpainted. I'm not brave enough to make that actual count to see if that's true. I'm not that brave.
My issue is when it comes to those finished models, I usually stick them in foam bags or something.
Right.
So I actually only see the unfinished stuff. I don't have good racks to display my minis. I mean, I got some IKEA cabinets downstairs, but one of them's holding like NASCAR collectibles and comic book collectibles and stuff. But the other one, I have a bunch of my old GW stuff in it.
Right.
So it's like, I'm thinking I need to either get another one or get some kind of shelf system that I can actually see that finished product that would kind of, you know, inspire me.
It's encouraging. Sometimes I'll go over to my shelves and I just look and I look at something and I go, oh, I painted that about 6 years ago. Cause he doesn't even have eyeballs. But I use two colors on this guy. But I stumbled on, I had a long time ago purchased one of the nail polish racks, the acrylic nail polish racks for my paints.
That's what I'm using for my paint right now.
Right. Well, since I moved my paint station, I don't need the acrylic racks anymore. So I moved them to a different location in my game room and I put my models on them. And they'll only hold up to a 32 millimeter base. So you can't put any of your 40 mil stuff in there, but I've got them in those. And I love the way they look in the row of acrylic.
Yeah.
You don't have any of the models behind each other. It's just this nice row of models. So I like it. It looks cool.
It's kind of like a spice rack for models, right?
It is. It's my spice rack for models. It'll be like playing a game. I'll be like, oh, I need some oregano. Hold on a second. Let me grab that. This is my oregano. I'm gonna have to paint a model and name him oregano just so I can get him off the shelf. That's not a bad name. I do have a bunch of Carnivale models that need to be painted too.
There you go.
So you definitely could have an oregano in there. But so
you got some other projects you were working on. I know you just finished up one for kind of tie into something we're gonna talk about later.
Right, right.
You finished painting every Drowned Earth model you have, right?
Yes. So I had four models left for the entire Drowned Earth collection.
Right?
That's everything that is currently released. I had four left that I had just been waffling on. And we had actually talked about this before, is the Drowned Earth. That is one of my two go-to games. That one. And well, I got three go-to games, but Twisted and Drowned Earth are a couple of my all-time absolute over the top favorites. And if you haven't looked at them, go look at them. Trust me, you won't be disappointed. But the Drowned Earth has dinosaurs in it, which is awesome. And the models are stunning. The problem is the rest of the game is so cool and the characters are so awesome. I haven't gotten past that point where I've even used dinosaurs in my games because I am just so enamored with the way the characters interact.
And well, they're like their hero level characters, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So when you play the game, being a narrative game, you're thinking of the, like, your classic action movies, where you have your Snake Plissken or, yes, you know.
Yes. Yeah, and so I haven't even used the dinosaurs. So three of the four models were dinosaurs that needed to be painted.
Okay.
How hard is
it to paint a dinosaur? You slap some brown or yellow ochre or something on there, some wash, done.
It's not that hard. I couldn't just do the brown. I didn't want to do the brown.
I'm looking at two dinosaurs right now.
Look at you, black right in front of me. And those are two of them that I just painted too. So three of them were dinosaurs. So I knocked them out. And then the last one was my last mounted leader, which is Nyx. And she's mounted on a Utahraptor. And the real reason I put her off for so long is I actually got my artifactors and firm models before the game released after the first Kickstarter for the Drowned Earth, because I was already running demos in the States, you know, just trying to drum up a little interest. So James hooked me up with some pre-production models to run some games. So I painted my Nyx a long time ago. So I got the Utahraptor all painted up. And then I'm looking at her going, I have no idea what colors I used. I mean, I know what they look like, but I'm supposed to make her look the same. And I have no idea. Do I even have these paints anymore?
Oh, man.
So I think that's the real reason I put it off and put it off and put it off. Because I was like, there's no way I'm not going to be able to match this. But I got pretty close and I finished everything. So I was pretty happy with that. I now have all of my Drowned Earth front to back painted.
Pretty good feeling accomplishment wise to have everything done.
It is. And then James decided he would mess me up by releasing some more leaders. So, yeah. So that was actually why I made the challenge, was because I made my pre-order for the new leaders. And I was like, okay, before they get here, I'm going to have them done.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so
What did you do then?
It took me like a day and a half to get them all finished. I was like, all right, well, that wasn't a very motivated. Good job. I was motivated because I'm excited.
And then you started another project. You started building some terrain for them.
I did. So I've got, man, I have so much Drowned Earth terrain for a couple of reasons. One, it's easy to build. Two, you can just do whatever you want. I mean, for real. And I had boxes of old MDF sprues, and I just started gluing stuff together and building it up, and it emulates these ruined buildings of the Drowned Earth, and I slap a bunch of lichen on them and weather them a little bit.
You clean out the aquarium store again?
No, I don't have to. I cleaned them out so long ago. It's going to be a couple years before I need to get back to the aquarium store. And actually, for those who are interested in building some Drowned Earth terrain, don't go to the aquarium store. It's way too expensive there.
Yeah,
you get yourself a coupon. You go to Michael's or Hobby Lobby, who both always have coupons, and you get yourself one of those big, giant, decorative balls of whatever foliage. You know, it's in their craft section for their planting. It's all the plastic plants. That stuff's a million times better anyway. And with a coupon,
it doesn't have that glossy look that an aquarium plant would have.
Yeah, some of it is even the cloth paper stuff that they do. So you can get some really good stuff and get it for kind of next to nothing.
Yeah.
And since it's not Earth, you can get really creative with weird plants. And I mean, I picked up a couple plastic Venus fly traps that are 6 inches tall so they can swallow your entire model. You know, so you can do all kind of crazy stuff like that. But yeah, so I put another one together today, and this one is, let's see, I'm looking over at it, is probably, I want to say, at least 36 inches tall.
Wow. And that's the cool thing about Drowned Earth is that multi-level. And we've talked about this before you know, that's what makes it stand out, is that your terrain isn't all one level. It is multi-level. Yeah. It could be, you know, as cinematic as you want.
Yeah. But we'll talk more about that.
Yes.
Coming soon.
But do you want to do a quick wrap up of Mace, or?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do a quick wrap up of Mace. And also, don't forget, guys, we've been putting a whole lot of story stuff up on the podcast too. Go and check those out, because kind of our motivation behind that is we've been pushing all these indie games and we love them. They're great. And they have a lot of really good writing. So we're doing these audio stories to kind of introduce you to the game the narrative of the game.
Yeah, the narrative, what the mood is, kind of like.
Yes.
You listen to our twisted ones that we're doing, and you're starting to get to some of the stories where they're giving background of some of the main characters. And, you know, the stories are really setting the mood of the world.
Oh, yeah.
So you get a feel for these characters and how they're very gritty. You know, they're not your shiny fairy tale characters. It's a dark world. So.
No, and that's what's kind of cool, because some of them are your fairy tale characters. Yeah. They're just not shiny anymore. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk Mace. Okay. Shoot, fire off. Let's talk Mace.
So it was we were only there for 2 days, right?
Yep.
That Sunday was kind of the last day. I know there was stuff going on, but you left the previous night. I actually, with my long road trip, that's when I left, was in the morning. But so, you know, we got there. His count, I mean, it was a weird year for him, but he really wanted to make sure he got it in this year. So, because next year is his 25th anniversary.
Yeah, that'll be the 25th year of Mace. And unless, of course, he had canceled this year.
Yeah. So
he wanted to make it happen.
To do that. And I mean, he still had a fairly okay turnout. There was a lot of people that showed up, a lot of role playing. I saw a lot of role playing there.
Yep.
So that was kind of nice to see, guys. You know, everybody was masked up. You know, they had they took all the precautions with the hotel and all that. And you know, we had some of the, we were in the room that had the miniature
stuff. Yep.
I mean, you got in a game of some Gaslands with a bunch of people that were there.
Yep. We did.
It was a lot of fun to see everybody too, you know.
We had the opportunity. We played Don't Look Back by Black Sight Studios.
Played that a couple times, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
We also, AJ, Unipolar Games, he got the opportunity to play Delta 10, which is another smaller independent game, Modern Warfare. And don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure they're out of Australia, but they might be out of New Zealand. I know they're from down under, but I think it's either Australia or New Zealand.
I thought I heard Alan say New Zealand.
Yeah, it might be, but it's, I'm personally not into the modern warfare. I want escapism when I'm playing, and I'm not interested in modern warfare. I former military. I'm good. I don't want to play it on the tabletop. I want to play with post-apocalyptic 500 years monkeys swinging through trees and shooting machine guns. That's what I want to play.
Sci-fi element.
Yeah, I just want some. I don't want reality is basically what it is when I'm playing the games. But for me, for Mace, I love Mace, and I missed it last year. Jeff has been slowly building back up the miniature community at Mace and been doing a great job. And as I understood it, last I had heard him, there was supposed to be a 40K tournament this year, which would have brought a bunch of miniature guys in.
Yeah.
But with the numbers restrictions and not being able to have, you know, having five people at a table and a limited number in a room, it wouldn't have worked. But I'm still excited because he's always excited about the miniature stuff that everybody comes to do. And Mace is easily one of my favorite conventions, and they're normally 700 plus people. And it's just a blast. But I will say this on a very positive note, even though it was small, but much smaller than it normally is, the regular people, the people that you really make friends with at the conventions who are kind of the regulars, they were all there.
Yeah.
So that's what was great about it.
It gave us the time to spend that extra time with those people. And one of my favorite things of the whole weekend, I think, was on Saturday. You, for instance, did a little class. Showing people how to do some simple scatter terrain. And if you guys want to check that out, I actually filmed it and put it up on our page. So you guys can watch Mac in his glory showing people how to hot glue stuff together.
Yeah. And showing Colin how to burn himself, apparently, over and over again. You'll have to watch the video to get that joke, but appreciate it.
After that, they had the little paint and take thing. That was a lot of fun, because it was you sat down to paint, and then that kind of motivated me. You know, I'm going to sit down and paint. Yeah. So both of us were painting, and then I dragged in Bethany to to paint. She's always so, you know, shy about painting and stuff. Yep. Like, get in here and just paint something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was good. I really enjoyed the paint and take. I had actually never done one of those before.
Okay.
Because normally, and again, this is one of the other things I did enjoy about this year's Mace in particular, is normally when I'm running demos, I do my very best to put the best eye candy on the table that I can, mm-hmm. as far as terrain, if nothing else, just to attract people to the table to ask about the game. And I'm usually running demos back to back nonstop. Well, because there weren't a lot of people there, I wasn't. So I got to do things like play other people's games, go and do a paint and take.
Yeah.
So that was overall kind of cool for me. Don't mishear me. I don't want it to be that way next year. I want it to be big again, and I want to run demos back to back for 13 hours. You know what I mean?
It's because you're a monster. You love doing that stuff.
I do, man. I love it. I love introducing people to new games.
All right. That kind of sums up Mace a little bit. Yeah. Can't wait till next year. We get back to like our norms and have a ton of people there, and you know, you can solidify those friendships. Like you said, there was a lot of people. There's a lot of people there that I got to meet for the first time.
Yeah.
Me being way up here in
freezing cold land.
I was going to say, yeah, brisk Chicago land.
It's not brisk, buddy. Brisk is here when it's 65 degrees and there's a breeze. That's brisk.
Well, I'm used to it up here, I guess. But yeah, I it was a lot of fun. It was nice seeing, you know, old friends. And, you know, I actually.
Who are you calling old?
Well, we ain't no youngins. I surprised myself. I didn't go home with like a car full of stuff like I was thinking. So I showed some restraint. I only got a book, and I got from Alan Discover Games. I got two posse sets for my Wild West Exodus, and I think that's about it.
Yeah, I didn't get much either. I picked up a few dice trays from Unipolar Games, which, if you are looking for dice trays, awesome dice trays, you need to check them out. He's got a lot of really cool ones, and he does custom ones, which is super nice. But I picked up a few dice trays, number one, because I like to support him. Number two, apparently I have an addiction to dice trays. And number three, when I'm playing a game, I like my dice trays. Yeah, I'm playing.
One point you had all those dice trays spread on the table.
I did.
By the demo. And then I asked, I said, what are you doing? Playing Bozo Buckets?
That's right. That's right. And then I bought that D20, the one that you could bludgeon someone death with.
Right. I did get that for Mary too. So
yeah, the golf ball sized one. And I just got that for kind of novelty.
Yeah.
It was cool. And
it's a paperweight.
it was cool. And normally I would have spent a whole lot more money on a whole lot of other stuff. So I figured spending that on that die was okay.
Yep. Well, all right. Why don't we get out of our jibber jabber, our banter, and we go into what we've been hinting about a little bit already in our main topic.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Let's do it.
All right, guys, we're back for our main topic today. And today we're going to talk about some Drowned Earth. Mac, what should we call this? Because we're probably going to cover Drowned Earth in more than one episode. What was the title I came
you
up
with? Said, you said waterlogged.
Yeah,
and while appropriate, it just doesn't roll off the tongue like Ray Gun Ramble or Twisted Talk. So if anybody out there listening has any suggestions for the Drowned Earth,
yeah, there we go. Throw it out to the listeners.
Guys could think of that we could call these segments. Because we don't know how long this one's going to go, because there's a lot to unpack in this game.
It's a narrative game, like many of the games we like focusing on. This game, we were meant talking a little bit about this. This game is competitive. It can be competitive. Yes. There is tournaments set up for it and stuff like that. But there is also solo games. And it's a narrative game where, like you mentioned, you're more into the characters of the game and the stories that they have to tell, because they're performing these big cinematic feats, you know,
right?
And interacting, you know, the environment is very interactive.
Yes.
So since we mentioned these big names, these big characters. Why don't we start off with a little bit of new stuff for Drowned Earth? And it's kind of something that's, I guess, motivate us to dive in. Get, you see what I did that? Dive in.
I see Drowned what you Earth. Did there.
And you already got them on pre-order, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like that thing hit the page. I was like, oh, hey.
You couldn't fill that shopping cart fast enough.
Man, I couldn't hit the buy now button fast enough.
Okay. But so
when something new Drowned Earth hits,
yeah,
I don't waste any time.
Well, and you painted all your stuff, right? So you need new stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think James did it on purpose. He knew that I was almost done painting my stuff. So he was like, well, I got to go ahead and release these because I won't have my Kickstarter stuff for a while yet.
Yeah, we're still waiting for the Kickstarter that wrapped up. What was that? Just a couple months ago.
Yeah, just a couple months ago. But James is notorious. Let me tell you, man, I backed a lot of Kickstarters and he is meticulous when it comes to running and producing.
He's organized, is I think what it is. He's very organized. He knows like those points to hit to make sure
things are
getting done. And that's good to see. That's great to see. I mean, he's an independent guy that is so dependent on the fan base, really, to think about it, that you don't want to let people down because, well, I understand it. I'd be letting myself down if I let somebody else down.
Well, you know? And he's the kind of guy that I remember on the first Kickstarter, I was talking back and forth with him, and he was irritated because he was only able to deliver a month early instead of 2 months early.
Yeah,
I'm like, man.
That says a lot about a company.
Right? And that says a lot about his character. You know what I mean? Not his Drowned Earth character, his character.
So what we wanted to start with was that characters. He has some new characters out, right, Mac?
Yes. They're not out yet. They're up for pre-order.
And basically, yes, that's right.
What we were doing is, so when the game came out, every faction obviously had a leader, like almost any skirmish game. I can't think of a skirmish game that doesn't have a leader model. But all of the factions only had a single leader. Mm-hmm. Well, this pre-order is a new leader for every faction.
So now you have choices when you're building your group, depending on the faction.
Right.
Now, we don't know particulars of these leaders yet, do we?
We know there's background posted, but the rules are still being play tested. Okay. So if you go to the Drowned Earth YouTube channel, you can get a little bit of information. So James likes to be sneaky. So he posted pictures of the cards in the live stream, but he blurred out certain sections of it. So you wouldn't see the whole card. You see like, oh, okay, they move this fast. They fight this well, but I don't know what their armor is. And I can't see what that skill is. So leaving a little bit of mystery to it, which I thought was kind of cool. But as far as the competitive portion of the game, he has people playtesting like crazy. So it's a very good system for competitive play. Now I say that with a caveat, and that's that as much as I can say what a good system is for competitive play, because I'm not a competitive player, but on the surface to me as a narrative player, nothing really appears broken. You know what I mean? It appears to be pretty balanced. I'm excited about all these new leaders because they're going to add a different synergy to each one of the factions. So they're going to take whatever your current leader is. So for instance, we'll start with Akara. She's the new leader for the Bondsmen, who are nasty slave traders and just generally unkind people.
They're like mercenaries in the game, right?
No, the mercs are the wayfarers, right? Those are the wayfarers. Okay. Those are the ones that can work for other factions. The bondsmen are literally that. They're the slave traders. They're hardcore. And so she's going to be a little different. So Lamosque is the current leader for the bondsmen. And he is an absolute brute. I mean, you don't want to get anywhere near him. So when you're running your bondsman with him, you're not so much playing with the synergy of what he's adding to everybody else. Everybody's just following him in to chop people into little bitty pieces because that's how LaMosque works. He's awesome. But Akara is, and I'm just gleaning this from the live stream and from what it says here, she's going to bring a completely different kind of synergy to the Bondsman group when you run them. So that's going to be kind of cool. And if you would like to know the little history, I am not going to read it for you on this podcast. However, I did just post on the 22nd of November, because this won't go up for a couple more days, about 45 minutes ago, an audio story of all of these new stories. But the model is fantastic. And of course, we'll throw a link up to the pre-order in the description, and these will be shipping, or expected release date is the 15th of December.
Okay.
So they're not too far out. I think these are 3D renders on the website, and they look just stunning. So Akara is actually going to come. There's two models for Akara. One is just the leader model on her 30 mil base. And then you're going to get a mounted Bondsman leader, because currently that's the faction that doesn't have a mounted leader. The other factions do. They have Nyx on a Utahraptor, Forek in an Exo suit. So to picture the Exo suit, just picture Ripley in Aliens in her Exo suit. That's what it looks like, right. But dwarf size. I'm sorry, not dwarf size, Dverg size, because that's what they are. They look like dwarves, but they're called Dverg. There you go. And then Kaneda is mounted on a giant praying mantis. And that's it for right now for the mounted leaders. And then, of course, Akara, who is coming mounted as well. And I don't remember who, or rather, I guess I should say what she is mounted on. Let me see. She is mounted on.
It's a little Triceratops.
That looks like a Triceratops. Oh, yes.
Poor buddy.
50 millimeter base.
She's riding them.
No, man. She was raised by she was raised by Utahraptors. That's probably her best friend.
Yeah, that's true. Probably
she's she's a dino girl. So that's the one for the Bondsman. And then we have, you know, I'm actually gonna save him for last. I'm gonna skip. So the next one we have is Plage. And he is just an awesome model too. So for a little bit of his background, he'll be for the Artifactors. And the Artifactors they're kind of my first love when I started into the Drowned Earth, partly because my options were two factions at the time before the game was released, and it was the Firm or the Artifactors. And the Firm are kind of like your gangsters, and I didn't really want to be them. And the Artifactors are more like your Indiana Jones, little bit of scavenger, a little bit of explorer, a little bit of a professor, kind of all of that balled into one. So they're really a neat faction. But Alephangus Plage is a famous Artifactor, and he's actually older and retired. And in the rule book, sprinkled throughout the rule book, there are letters that were written to kind of flesh out the Drowned Earth.
Okay. Yeah, that's
and
right.
He is the author of those letters.
Okay.
So very, very cool. And he appears to be operating as a relatively inexpensive support piece. So he's going to function more in a support role as opposed to.
Isn't that something that I think I remember hearing some of the people wish that this faction had more support because so many of the characters were, I guess, more, I don't want to say aggressive, but more jump into the fray type of characters.
Yes and no. I mean, I could see that. It's a lot of that is from the, I believe the competitive side.
Maybe
because
that's what it is.
Because those support characters, you're looking for them when you're a list builder kind of guy. I'm not a list builder kind of guy. I'm like, oh, this model looks cool. I've got to play them. That's me. And I'm more power to the list builder guys.
Something also to it, what it is, you know, the game's getting older. So now we're starting to get more and more choices, if you want to call it perfection. So you have more that you can do with, you know, what you're building, whether you're competitive or not, you know, maybe you want to explore this certain character. And now that you have more choices, it's like, well, let's see how he works with these guys and just see what happens story-wise. So,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So he's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to him coming out. As far as the one I am waiting for is Mara. Now, Mara is for the militia. Now, I'm waiting for her because the militia, that's the faction I love to play. My favorite. That's my favorite faction right there.
Now, what is it about that faction that you like?
Well, to tell you the truth, the thing that I like the most about that faction is the characters that compose that group. So my favorite character in there is Hove. And Hove is a hated character in the game because he's a sniper. But he has the best backstory. And I don't think there's... When we write stories of overcoming adversity and stuff,
mm-hmm.
we've been telling stories as a people for so long that a lot of the story is kind of, it's replayed and those same things appeal to us. You know what I mean? So you take movies like Last of the Mohicans, Star Wars, and all the movies like that, they resonate with us because they're telling this story of good over, basically the story goes like this. Everything was good, then something bad happened, and then something good happens, right? That's the progress of those stories. So that's Hove's story. Now, okay, I got to set this story up. My all-time favorite movie is The Outlaw Josey Wales. And Hove is basically The Outlaw Josey Wales. So he is this farmer. He's got a kid and a wife. They live out in the jungle. They're doing their thing. They're living off the grid, if you will. The bondsman come by while Hove is gone. This is exactly what happens in The Outlaw Josey Wales. And they burn his farm, kill his family. Now he's just a farmer. He doesn't know anything about hunting down these hardcore killers that are the bondsmen, but he doesn't care. He goes after them anyway. And after years of him hunting them down, he becomes this Rambo style guerrilla fighter. And he hunts all of them down. He ends up joining the militia because he finds the last one, but he can't quite nail him down. And Forek tells him where he is. He says, but when you're done, you know, basically, what are you going to do after you're done? Join me kind of thing. So his story, that's what drew me to the militia. That was as so what I did is when I painted my model, he has this. It looks like a piece of cloth, large piece of cloth dangling from his belt. So I painted it like a dress. Like it would have been a piece of his wife's dress and painted that on. So I thought that's what drew me to the militia.
So that's definitely a lot of story in that one character. And a lot of all the characters in this game are like that. And, you know, have some kind of backstory of who they are. Why are they here? What are they doing? What are their goals, I guess.
Right.
And just the nature of this game is you can make your games this cinematic game. Like I mentioned before, the multi-level, that's what makes this game very different from your other tabletop miniature games, skirmish games, where it kind of encourages you to be creative and make these extravagant boards that are, you know, you have them way up high and, you know, you can climb and swing and jump and shoot and while you're jumping. And
because of the way the rules are written, they're usable. It doesn't just become this tall piece of terrain that nobody's going to get on or you're going to put a sniper up there and just leave them.
In some sense that, you know, what that reminds me is of role-playing. You're playing a role-playing game, you know, you're creating a scene or this short moment in time type of thing.
Yeah, a little piece of their history. But so that's why I'm really waiting for Mara. All of that to say that's why I'm waiting for. And I'm going to share one of the lines from her story. And this is one of the things that I love about the way James sets up his stories. Okay, he'll leak a little bit of information at a time. So the last line of this, I won't read it in the other voice that I do the stories in. You'll have to go listen to those. But it says, those who meet Mara are struck by her relentless determination, dedication to the job at hand, and the flicker of ghosts in her pained eyes. Okay, so what is that? What is that in the story? I need to know what that's all about. Yeah. So he just leaves you hanging.
He's planting seeds is what he's doing. Oh, absolutely. For stuff to come. And if you guys go in some of the early models, you get these little seeds here and there. Or if you read the different fluff stories that he has for the game, you get those little seeds and then you can follow them to another character. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you don't feel like reading those stories, just be patient. I'll finish reading all of them to you and you can listen on the podcast. I don't mind reading.
Well, you like telling that story, you know?
I love telling the story. And then, okay, the last boss, this is the one I'm wanting to paint the most. This isn't the one. Now, I'll have him, of course. I pre-ordered everything. And he is for the Fern. And he basically kind of looks like a gorilla Steven Seagal. I don't know how else to describe him, but I'm looking the most forward to painting him. He's a big model. He's on a 40 mil base. So he's a Barangi. And for those of you that aren't familiar with the game, that's basically the race that is a anthropomorphized gorilla. So they're human gorilla, basically. And what I love about this character is, so he's like the number two guy in the Fern. So the Fern is the gangsters. Their structure is even boss, under boss, just like gangs. That's their structure. So the great thing about him is he's basically the second in command, okay, of the Five Lakes Syndicate. He's the man. And the only person who can tell him what to do is the boss.
I like him, man. He looks
he's
really
awesome looking.
His model, the stance that he's
You
know, he's got his
Steven Seagal jacket on.
Yeah. And he's got his both his fists are all wrapped up in some kind of rope or belt, or you know, he's getting ready to pound on something.
Yeah. I can tell you who he wants to pound on, and that's where this story is going. So the current leader of the Fern, you may have heard me say earlier, is Kaneda. He comes mounted on a praying mantis. Well, Kaneda is the son of the boss of the Five Lakes Syndicate. And Kaneda is a little bit of a screw up.
Yeah.
But Castle can't really touch him because he's the boss's son. But it's just one of those little gangster stories where you've got the incompetent son under the big boss. And then you've got the underboss who can't stand it. So, again, creating that dynamic. And this is one of the things that we talked about in Twisted, too. So you're talking about that story dichotomy where you've got an adversarial faction versus faction. And then you've got an adversarial within the faction.
Yeah, an inner and struggle.
Right. And so that's really cool. For the guys like us that like to play narrative, now that plays into competitive too. But generally speaking, I can't even speak to that. I don't know about the competitive guys. If you're a competitive player, throw a comment up or something and let me know. Do you care about the narrative? Because I don't know, and I'm curious about that, because I would think if I was super competitive, I don't think I would care as much about the story. I think I would just care about the mechanic of it.
As someone that has played competitively in Wild West Exodus, but that's me. I'm different where I don't really care if I win or lose, but I do play competitively, but I still keep that story of those characters. Yeah. I mean, I've been known to holler and hoot and pretend to shoot my guns in the, in the air while I'm playing. So, I mean, yeah, I wonder too, is it where you just look at the stats and, you know, number crunch. Okay, this is my probability with this guy to do this. Or do you play him because he's really cool?
Yeah. Yeah. And I, either way, I get that. I mean, there's so many different aspects to all of our games. Who cares why you're really playing the game? You're playing the game. That's as long as you're having fun. If you're having fun and you're being hyper competitive, awesome. If you're having fun and you don't even know what the word competitive means, awesome. You know, as long as you're playing and having fun, that's why we do these. That's why we play with our little toy soldiers.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure I'd get a whole lot of amens on that one if this were a live podcast. But those are the new leaders that are coming out, and I am super, super excited about them. I'm just going to probably sit here the rest of the night and look at this castle model and try to figure out how I want to paint him, because he's so awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I'm already thinking, well, what do you paint his jacket? Do you do?
Oh, you got to do some like crazy Asian themed, you know, designs, lotus flowers, or something.
He's a gorilla. Can you technically, would it be weird to paint the big old fighting tiger on the back of his coat?
No way, man. No way. If there were any wild mammals, not intelligent mammals, left in the world, he probably had fought one.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever the equivalent of a tiger is in the drowned earth, he has probably fought.
Maybe.
I'd be willing to let it go on his jacket. And then, of course, right after these guys come out, I don't remember. I would have to check the Kickstarter. I don't remember when the expected delivery date is for the Kickstarter. But then we're going to get even more models. So we've got the generic characters that are coming. We have all of the new Gene Splicer models, which are, I mean, how can you not be excited about that? That's just going to be absolutely crazy, especially because one of those Kickstarter models I got to design, and I am super excited about that. But this one is going to have, again, like I said, a bunch of new models. So you'll get the hero pack, which is basically four models. You get a brawler, a marksman, a tough, and a scout. And for those of you not familiar with the game, that's basically the role of each of the models. And these are actually going to be generic guys that you can use. And then, of course, there's a bunch of more dinosaurs, because it's a dinosaur game. A
lot more on that game.
Yeah, definitely. But then you're going to get a whole new faction, which is the Pirates, and that is the faction that I created a model for, which is super cool. Go check out the Drowned Earth fan page if you are not already a member of that. And then there are six. I want to say that there are six Gene Stealers.
It was more than last time.
I crossed that line. Gene Stealers. Gene Splicers. No, there were seven Gene Splicers.
Yeah, he added some more in that last week, just because he wasn't sure if people were going to jump on it. But so many people in the comments of the Kickstarter were requesting it, that, you know, they wanted some more. So he ended up adding a couple more, because, you know, he's, as a creator, he's worried about, you know, play testing and making sure they're worthwhile characters. So he didn't want to go crazy and just offer a whole bunch of them. So he did up it from the last time. And I'm looking, we have till June, Mac.
June? That's too far.
As a side note, if you guys have missed this Kickstarter, because this was months ago that he did this.
Yeah.
You can late pledge it on the Kickstarter page. For the campaign.
You can still go over there, and we will throw a link up in the description so that you can get over there and check it out and pick up some of the other models that are coming out. Also, there's one last model that's coming out, and that is the Pirate Queen. She is also another model coming out. So lots more cool stuff. The rules for the Gene Splicer stuff are not there yet. I don't even know what the rules for my guy are.
Yeah.
But
not that it'll matter. We're narrative. Who doesn't want to play with a hippo snacking on some watermelon?
That's right, man.
He's just a happy pirate. Can there be a happy pirate?
Of course there can be a happy pirate. He's happy till you make him mad. Go read the story. It's on the Facebook page. Go read the story about Matiu and Tidala. Those are two of the new Gene Splicers that will be coming out. So you got the names at the very least.
Yeah. So we got a little ways to wait for this, but I think what's neat with this Kickstarter, when we do get it, it's going to open the doors for a lot of people, because it's a perfect place to start. Everything you need is in this box, and then you can slowly expand out.
Yep, absolutely. And I can't say enough. I mean, we haven't even touched on rules and the reaction mechanics, the amount of fluff that is included in the book, the unstable scenery rules, the danger zones, swimming in the game, all this kind of stuff. We haven't even touched on that right now, but I cannot encourage you enough. Check out the book. You've got to check out the game. It's at thedrownedearth.com. It is, like I said, this one and Twisted, they got my heartstrings, man. They got my heartstrings. You know what I'm saying?
Butter your bread. On
there
both sides.
You go. I live in the South, so they butter my biscuit, you know. but you can download the rulebook PDF for free as well. So you can check out the rules. Now, you miss all the fluff in it, and I'm totally okay with leaving that out. You know, you got to make a little money off your game if you want to keep pumping out models, right?
Yeah.
But it is all the rules, and you can check out the unique and dynamic gameplay. I cannot say the word dynamic enough times when it comes to how this game plays. It is ridiculous.
There's a ton. I think if you go on YouTube and search this game, you'll find a lot of videos of playthroughs and previews of this game that different companies and channels and game groups have featured. So you can get a taste of how it works. And if you want to know mechanically, like what there is, there's so much in there that, it's probably too much for us to talk about in one episode.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's why we're going to make this a multi-episode thing that, you know, next time maybe we can focus on a different element of the game.
Oh, absolutely. We can talk factions. We can talk locales. There's so much cool stuff in this book. And on a completely different note in regards to the book is the quality of the book.
Does it smell good?
James put out.
Does it smell good?
Oh, yeah, it smells good.
I love the smell of a new book.
It's beautiful pages, beautiful artwork. It's got the nice glossy pages. The binding, it has stood up extremely well. My books go to conventions and they get thumbed through by everybody that walks by the table. They get thumbed through all the time by me. Eric's is still in the shrink wrap. Sorry, man. I had to throw you under the bus on that one.
I had to.
But it's an absolutely gorgeous book. And like we said earlier, you can see the attention to detail that was put into this game. And it is, at the very least, worth checking out. So make sure you guys do that.
Go check that out, guys. And we will continue with Drowned Earth the next time. Should I introduce like you and just Phantom Dice? Hey guys, and welcome to Phantom Dice, where we like to talk about the new games, the new hotness, the things that we're really into, and we like to talk about some news and maybe things coming out soon. So I'm talking about our game, right, Mac?
Yeah, man, you got it. You got this one.
So I have a new game. Well, it's not a new game. I've been watching this one for a long time, ever since
I
kind of came across it. And this is a game out of the UK called Moonstone. And Moonstone is, I got to find my notes.
Is a whimsical fantasy skirmish game for 2 to 4 players, which sees you leading fairy tale inspired characters across the dark lands in search of precious moonstones. There you go. There's your commercial.
You almost sounded like the Micro Machines guy there.
I can't talk quite that fast, but I do well remember the Micro Machines guy.
So the thing that jumped out at me about this game was, of course, like many games with us, is the models.
You
do have that fairy tale theme with this, but it's a game where what you're needing maybe 5 to 6 models max to play a skirmish game.
Yep.
It's a little bit different. I mean, it has like a bluffing card mechanic in
it. No dice rolling. I mean, at all.
The dice that you're rolling are those 4-sided dice that are, you know, technically your moonstone that, yeah, here I just found 3 to 6 models per player. So you can get going with, you know, very little expense, and the models are fantastic looking. I've been watching this for a while just because I like the models for a hobby aspect, the paint things. It one of the unique things that it has in here is it uses a number of shared custom card decks, which they use it's like a combination of bluffing techniques, kind of like what you would find in poker. And on their old Kickstarter page, it actually says rock, paper, scissors, which is, I find kind of funny. I mean, it's your typical skirmish game where they all have different abilities, and you know, you're in a race to collect the most moonstones,
right?
Which are those four-sided dice that it's kind of neat. You take those four-sided dice and you just kind of randomly just throw them over the board, and they land where they land, and they land on what number they land. And that number determines, like, I think it's a special action to, like, you're digging them up.
Yeah. Of how clearly we haven't played it yet, times. And we don't have the rules yet, but I'm sure after we ramble on about it for a certain amount of time, it's inevitably going to cause the twitchy clicking purchase finger to.
There happens to be a cart right now in one of my windows.
That
all I have to do is just press that button. Because one of the things that recently made it be, you know, come to my attention is like, oh, look at that. When we were at Mace, I, you know, going through Facebook and I saw a little ad for this. They have, if you guys aren't into it yet, this may be your jumping point, because it's probably going to be mine later tonight, is they're having a special Christmas bundle that, let me tell you guys what you are getting in this bundle.
That Christmas bundle is a good, it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
the only thing is right now with the shipping, that's where you kind of are getting hit. But really, I think if you get together with a buddy and order yourself some stuff, then it definitely makes it worthwhile. I'll tell you what I like, besides the fact that the miniatures are super awesome looking, is the names. I love the names. So the game is Whimsical Fantasy.
Yeah.
And it is definitely whimsical, with guys like Seasick Stew, Boom Boom McBoom, and everyone's favorite, Doug the Flatulent.
Oh, yeah.
You got Vicious Midget, and those are just the goblins. That's just the goblin facts.
What about Eric the Squire?
Eric the Squire looks pretty good. I like Eric the Squire. And then Baron Von Fancy Hat is a favorite. I love Baron Von Fancy Hat. Friar Flavius and Gertrude the Fairy Hunter.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of character in this game. You know, you just think about the shenanigans that these characters can get into. And there's a lot of different factions. I mean, they have your typical goblins and humans, but they got gnomes. They got like fae.
Yep, they got the fairies.
They have some fairies. And then they got your giants and ogres and trolls. And a big one that's on my list is the jackalope. I love me a jackalope.
Yeah, the jackalope model is very nice. And a lot of the models are nice. And as I typically do, I thumb through the models and I'm saying to myself, what other games can I use these models in?
Yeah.
And that's what's going to ultimately pull me in is, can I use them across other games? And the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
They are pretty whimsical. So there's some of them that you really wouldn't be able to, some of them that are maybe a little too silly for maybe some of your more serious games.
Those ones may be the ones that you more or less just get them for the hobby aspect because of, you know, the joy of painting.
Or if it's because if you're jumping in to play Moonstone as well, I would like to try the game at the very least because it looks cool. And I'm all about supporting the independent game companies. And this one looks really well put together. The artwork is just beautiful. And I'll tell you kind of what it reminds me of is it reminds me a little bit of a cross between Monty Python and the Adventures of Baron von Munchausen.
Yeah, it really does. I don't know if that's because that's a UK kind of sense of humor.
Maybe.
It could be. But yeah, if you guys were interested in this, the name of the company, we actually haven't mentioned that. It's an independent company that goes by Goblin King Games. They were originally a Kickstarter when they started this. And this Christmas starter bundle, I don't know for sure how long it's going to last. They don't have a date on it. It's probably going to be while stock last. But for, it's £69, which is about, I think it's about $90 American, which is normally about $130 is what the cost is, because you're getting basically the two-player starter, you're getting a hardcover book, and you're getting, for each player, depending on who wants to play what, you're getting a troll and a giant.
Yeah.
So that's quite a bit. I mean, 107 pounds is normally what this normally costs.
Yeah, $142 for the starter for us over here in the colonies.
So I mean, you're getting a lot. I think I did the math when I first saw this, and I'm like, man, I'm saving $50. But then, like you mentioned, shipping.
Yeah.
So you're probably really only going to save about maybe 25 bucks.
But versus the shipping on the regular price that you're going to have to slap onto it, you're saving all of that money. So it's really a good deal. And the truth of the matter is when we as gamers find these games that are out of the country, that's part of the pain that you have to endure is the shipping. It's part of it. So if it's something that keeps you from it, then get to your game store and be a representative for the game and get it represented. So it's in stock in your store and then you don't have to worry about it.
I don't know any stores in the States that are stocking this, but if you guys are interested, check them out on their website. It's shop.moonstonethegame.com. That's their store. You can look at all the other models they have available. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, they got some cool stuff. Definitely go check it out. Even if you're just checking it out for the artwork, it is worth a peek. They also naturally have a Facebook group, so you can pop over to the Facebook group and check that out as well. And it is just Moonstone for the Facebook group, I believe. Moonstone Players. Yeah, I'm in that group. So it's Moonstone Players. Pretty decent sized group and appears to be reasonably active. So get over there and check it out. Join the group, comment on a bunch of stuff and look at some really cool paintings. There's a couple of new models that have just been released that a lot of people are posting pics of their paint jobs on it. So you can do that. And it's just, it looks to be a blast. So got to check it out.
Old classic flashback.
All right, guys, it is time for another classic flashback. Games from yesteryear and those old ones that are out of print or that show your age when you mention them at the store. And in this case, this one is going to do exactly that. So I was struggling a little bit to figure out what I wanted to do. So I had two games on the table. One of them, maybe not so much a classic flashback, but it was based on the edition I was going to talk about, which was Vampire the Masquerade, second edition. So that's going way back. That's not new, like the newer editions, obviously. So maybe I'll talk about that next time.
Yeah, but that in the back burner.
Yeah, that one's definitely a back burner one because that one's an oldie and a goldie for me. Spent a lot of nights playing a lot of games for a lot of hours.
I think you need to set this up of how Man of War came about. What happened the other night when we were done recording and we were still chit-chatting?
I can neither confirm nor deny anything that you are about to say.
What happened? What little buying place popped up and how did that happen?
I don't know. It's all a blur. And I don't know somehow what happened.
You opened an eBay window and did a search.
I opened eBay and I was like, oh, you know what, I remember Man of War, let me type it in. And then my buy finger started twitching bad because I said, oh, there's one, and it hasn't even been punched. The tokens haven't even been punched. So obviously, based on those comments, I'm going to talk about Man of War. So I purchased Man of War when it came out, when it was brand new. 1993, I think.
Yeah, it's going pretty far back.
Somewhere around there, 1993. And it was, now understand, I'm looking back with rose-colored glasses here. I am not sure what I would think of the game mechanics today. But as I remember it, it was an absolutely fantastic war game. And of course, at the time, me and the group that I was playing with out in California, we were heavily playing Warhammer Fantasy Battles. So this was just another element of the early phases of my narrative desire in my skirmish games. Because now we could play a game of Fantasy Battles and then we could make the story take us to the sea battle portion of it. So for those of you that don't know, Man of War was a skirmish game. I don't think it was dubbed a skirmish game back then, but it was sea battles in the world of Warhammer by Games Workshop. And the original sets, so the things that weren't, that didn't end up being in there, the factions that didn't end up being in there, were the Wood Elves and the Ogres and the Lizardmen. I think those were the ones that at the time didn't make it out. So you had a core box set, which had two fleets in it, and basically had an Imperial fleet, which was the Empire, and you had a pirate fleet. They didn't get real fancy on the box set. So basically the models were identical, except one was blue and one was red.
Yeah.
And they had some different flags that you could put on there. But that's what came in the box set. And it was really neat. It came with individual cards for your ships where you could keep track of your damage. Won a lot. There was very, I don't recall there being a whole lot of record keeping on your ships. But it was just an absolute blast to play. It was really simple. It was kind of a dice chucking game, really more than anything. Very, very beer and pretzels. Lots of scenario based stuff. And then, of course, being Games Workshop, they had a ton of additional ships for all of the other armies that you could do. So they had the Empire, obviously, which came in the starter, but they had expansion ships. So you could get the big war galleons and stuff instead of the little standard ships that came in there. Bretonians, which was actually interesting because they weren't really a presence in fantasy battles at the time. They would come out a little bit later after that. And they had the dwarf fleet, the high elves, the dark elves, the orcs. You had all four of the chaos. They were all referred as plague fleets, but it was all four of the chaos gods, the chaos dwarves, the Skaven, and the Norse, I think, were right there on the end. There were two supplements, which were Plague Fleet, which kind of, that's where they brought in all the chaos stuff, and Sea of Blood, that brought in the Norse and sea monsters and flying flyers in there. So the dwarves had like a balloon that was part of it.
And so they had,
the Empire had hippogriffs and griffins and things like that. And it was really cool. It was a lot of fun to play, and I remember it being a pretty good mechanic. And I remember a lot of those earlier GW games being, any game I think has something broken in it, but I remember them being pretty solid. First edition Necromunda, real solid.
They had Battlefleet Gothic at that time too,
right? I still have Battlefleet Gothic.
Blood Bowl, I think, was really good.
Actually, Blood Bowl just got a new release too.
Yeah, so they did.
I don't have my old Blood Bowl, but I do have my original Battlefleet Gothic box.
Okay.
I do have that. And so that was basically the game in a nutshell, and I loved it. And I am on the cusp of clicking the buy it now button or the bid button.
Maybe you know this because you're such a uber fan of the game. Can you get stats and rules of this game? I heard rumors that you can somewhere on the interwebs and just proxy in ships because this game is so out of print. I think there's enough fan groups of it that you can probably find rules on that.
I don't know. You might be able to. To jump games, I know Necromunda is like that. They have a community that is, and for the life of me, I'm drawing total blank on the website, but they have a living rule book where they've kind of fixed a couple of the broken things, but it is essentially the basic rule book.
Cause I know original Blood Bowl was this exact same thing. You could get the rules online with these fan groups that they have, because for many, many years, there was no Blood Bowl supported by GW because it was an older game, but the fan base was so huge, they just kept it going. And I think Man of War has a similar thing. All those, what did they call them? Specialty games at Games Workshop?
It was the specialist division of
and
Games
some of
Workshop.
Them are coming back. So we may get a new version of Man of War. When you look at games out there that are like Dystopian Wars, and there's another one coming out by Mantic, I think.
Well, it looks like after a very quick search while we were just running our mouths, it looks like the Esoteric Order of Gamers website, they have rules and cards up if you wanted to mess around with it. And I am sure that if you dug around,
you could probably find something
on the internet. Yeah, that you could definitely find it. And you could very easily proxy ships in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably the easiest thing to proxy would be orcs, because you could just throw kind of anything on the table, because that's what orcs do. you might have a little more trouble with anything else, trying to get fancy with some of the other
stuff. I'm trying to save you your buy it now finger button.
Oh, thank you. That is so enormously generous of you.
I gotcha.
Wow, that is awesome. you're just so nice to me. Wow. And there's something about having that box, though. You know what I mean?
I'm kind of the same way. I'm that purist or collector or whatever you want to call it. Nostalgia.
Yeah,
maybe
a lot of people have commented before that it was really one of Games Workshop's better specialist game rules.
Mm-hmm.
I was really in love with all their specialist games. I loved Gorkamorka and Man of War. Space Hulk,
came back too. So
yeah, and to me that one's, even though I know it is a specialist game, it always seemed really like a staple of Games Workshop to me in my mind. It was always a staple in my mind. And like I said, Necromunda, Blood Bowl, I loved them all. I loved everything that they had. I had stacks. I wish I still had all the games. I had stacks of GW boxes. Every time Fantasy Battles new army box would come out, you know, where they'd release the two armies in it. Oh, had to have it. That copy of White Dwarf that came with the skink, had to have it, man. Had to have it. Always. All right. Well, that wraps up Man of War. So if anyone out there in listening land happens to have a copy of Man of War that you are just collecting dust in your house, I would be happy to take that off of your hands and perhaps even record a battle report of us playing Man of War. We could probably swing that one over the Zoom to pull that one off.
We could.
So that's what we have for Classic Flashback. What do we got in news there, Mr. Huffman?
I want to go over just with the holidays coming up. And I mentioned already with the Moonstone that, you know, they have a Christmas bundle.
Yeah.
So there's tons of Black Friday sales out there. And I just wanted to mention a few of them if you guys were interested in picking up those good deals. A lot of your local stores are having them. You know, try to support your local stores, especially nowadays with everything going on in the world. But I have so many windows open up in my phone just waiting for me to press buttons that have Black Friday sales. Probably the first one on my list is Hero Forge is having some good sales, you guys, that you can get. I think it's $5 off a model if you order it, you know, they print it type of thing and shipped it to you. And all their STL files, which is not that long ago, we got some that Alan printed for you. They're normally like $7. I think they're like $3.99 for an STL file now.
Wow.
I think that sale goes through, I want to say the end of the month for Black Friday, but then I saw stuff at Miniature Market is having sales, you know.
And you can't beat a sale at Miniature Market because their stuff's usually on sale anyway.
If you guys are looking for storage bags, oh my God, I just blanked Mac. Battle Foam is having good sales. They always have sales at this time of the year, Black Friday, anywhere from 15% to, I think they have clearance prices on some stuff like 70% off. So
nice.
But it's like I said, there's a lot of good sales right now with the holidays coming up.
Yeah. And having talked so much about GW there on the end. Okay. For all of you who listen to us for the indie part of it, don't hate me because I've talked so much about GW. I like every game. They're all good. Anyway, on that note, there's a really great company, segue to the independent thing, Puppets War. Most of the 40K guys probably already know about it, but if you don't, Puppets War makes some great resin bits for 40K, particularly if you're a Night Lords player. Don't ask me how I know that, because I was a Night Lords player. And they're also having a Black Friday sale, so check them out too, because they have good stuff. I purchased a whole lot of stuff from them when I was doing my Night Lords, and it's high quality stuff. I really, really like it. If I were still playing 40K, I'd be throwing all of my money at Puppets War again.
And then I think I wanted to mention some Kickstarters. Unfortunately, we couldn't get this episode out before these Kickstarters because they were quick, short ones for the holidays, because they wanted to make sure they can get these delivered before Christmas. But our friends that make Twilight had I think it was like a 6-day Kickstarter. He funded. He went well over what his goal was. And I hope you guys got in on that one. He had some for three kind of special models to support your forces in Twilight.
Yeah, because to be fair, his Kickstarter funding wasn't real surprising, because those models he was doing on Kickstarter are awesome.
Yeah, they're really nice. So, I mean, if you guys got on that, I think he's already shipping them. Because he had a bunch of stuff pre-cast. Oh,
wow. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. And then our friends at Flags of War.
Yes.
That one might still be going, depending if when I get this episode out. But it was a short one, too. That was like a 15-day one.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't make the connection or don't remember the connection, Flags of War is also Funky Skull Games, which is Street Wars, which we've talked about on a couple different occasions.
And this was on the historic side. So if you guys are historical players, you know, he's doing a lot of stuff in set around Scotland, England, and what is it? 1700s.
1700s.
Okay. So yeah, he had a fairly short one on for that one. But I think that's about it that we came across for Kickstarters recently.
Yeah, there are some that are beginning to ship stuff, such as Planet Bound is shipping, not books yet, but the swag. So the t-shirts, dice trays, coffee cups, things like that, that people who wanted to support the game but weren't really interested in playing the game but still wanted to support were able to get. So those actually, from today's date, which is the 24th of November, we talked to AJ, who is producing the t-shirts and stuff. I believe he said he shipped a lot of stuff yesterday.
Yeah.
So people should start to see stuff. And on a side note, to give more specifics on Flags of War, he covers a lot of the Jacobite Rebellion. And so that's, so time frame wise, what you're looking at, if you know what I'm talking about when I say Jacobite Rebellion, you won't need me to tell you the time frame. But if you're just looking for the time frame, you're talking late 1600s to mid 1700s time frame for historicals. And he's got some, his flags are stunning. They're I can't even describe them. You just have to go look at them. They're super, super nice. And when you're playing those kind of historical games, they really just set apart a unit. So check those out.
Yep. And then I guess in other mentions for our news is we always like to mention our good buddy Jim's Bexham's Bazaar magazine. If you guys haven't heard about this, checked it out. He does offer, I think you can go and download some sample magazines to check it out, see what it's about. He covers everything from stuff that you can use in role-playing games to tabletop skirmish games. And he has a lot of original type stuff in there. It could be terrain. He has a lot of papercraft terrain
that
people have supplied to the magazine.
Yeah, it's a great magazine. If you guys remember Dragon Magazine, it really harkens back to that with a little bit of the old White Dwarf stuff, where they used to have the ideas for building your own tanks and instructions for making terrain and stuff like that. So it's kind of when I look at it, I always see a mix of Dragon Magazine and the old White Dwarf magazine scenarios and stuff like that. And then, of course, the other thing that Jim does, which is his RPG and War Games Supply Source Book. Now, that is quite possibly the most dangerous book in the wargaming community.
That's two of my tabs that are open that came from that, because the magazine, he offers it free. It's middle of the month, I think, is what it is. We just got a recent issue of it.
Yes.
And the whole thing, you know, it's a digital magazine, but he's got everything in there as a hyperlink. So if you see something you like, you click on it, it opens a window in your browser. So yeah, I got a couple browsers open because of that.
So, and it's an extremely dangerous book. So just, you have been warned. It's got terrain stuff. It's got 3D printing stuff. It's got miniature companies. It's got game companies. And if you happen to be an independent developer and your ear falls on this podcast, the ads in that magazine are a one time, I believe it's one time $5 fee to run your ad. And then if you want to change your ad, it's like $5 for him to change it because he has to reformat the hyperlinks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's free and it's really good. So if you have anything, you don't even have to be an independent gamer, but I suspect that's mostly who we have been, whose ears we have that we're bending. But if you are someone who has something you want to get in the magazine, a product you're trying to sell, get in touch with him. We will, if let me make a note here, we'll put a link. We usually, I think, have a link.
Yeah, we usually have a link for both those for people to find. It's like, I like the magazine because he calls it the Christmas catalog
for gamers. Man, it is so, makes me feel like I'm sitting down in my living room circling every G.I. Joe action figure in the Sears catalog, you know?
Yeah, I want this one, I want this one.
That's right. My mom used to tell me, just circle the page. I'm like, okay. And I just dog-ear this page. I don't have to waste any ink. That's right. I don't have to waste any ink. And then, of course, the last and most important news bit is CoastalCon 2021, February 26th and 27th in beautiful Beaufort, South Carolina. If you need an excuse to come and your spouse doesn't want to go to a gaming convention, that's okay, because we are at the beach. So you can bring her anyway, and there's plenty of stuff to do. But we are getting spooled up for that. Everything is coming together rather nicely.
What are some of the games you got lined up in that? I know you had a lot of people already chiming in of stuff that they want to run and run demos. And
So here's what we have on the list so far. And now these games are confirmed, minus one potential, and I'll explain that when I get to it. So we have Frostgrave and Gaslands. We've got Stargrave. That's the one that's a potential, and that's all based on whether or not it gets released. So that's by the creator of Frostgrave, and it's essentially just a space version of Frostgrave. So those are a couple we have on there. We also have Gamma Wolves, which is a game by Ash Barker, Relic Blade, Zone Raiders. We've got a Star Wars RPG happening. We've got Muskets and Tomahawks, and that one is a little bit dependent on the gentleman who's going to run it is still active duty, and he is deployed, but he's supposed to be back in time. So we'll see what happens with that one. We also have Twisted and the Drowned Earth running, and we've got our Stephen Smith, who was with us last year, will be coming back to run some more Pulp Alley. I'm super excited about that. I'm actually hoping to get into that this time because I really want to play. I have all the cards, all the books, all the supplements and everything, and I really want to play. We've also got Core Space and Necromunda are going to be a couple of the games going on. We've got Circuit Racing, which is a game that is designed by a fella who is local here. He lives in Savannah, and he designed the game. It's a racing game. It's really cool. No shooting. It's just a space age racing, not really space age, but futuristic racing game. We've got Free Blades from DGS Games. They will be joining us again. And then we have a game that is in production by another local guy who is a teacher here in town, and he is working on a game called Mythical Triple Crown. I know nothing about it except who's designing it. And then we have some possibilities that are coming up, and this is all predicated on whether or not I can find someone to run the games, and that is Urban Manhunt, Twilight, Shadow Sea, Retro Raygun, Blood Red Skies. We may also have War Rocket and Atomic Tanks, also from Hydra Miniatures. So we got a pretty substantial list.
A lot.
And that's just 1 week of me reaching out. We've also got some vendors lined up. So currently, vendor-wise, we have, as you might expect, Discover Games and Unipolar Games. Those are a couple of staples for us. They're both very big supporters of what we do with CoastalCon. But we also have Nick Bogart, who has Miniature Misfits. He has 3D prints a bunch of stuff. We have Big E Games, which is Eric Fontaine. He'll be there with a bunch of Warlord stuff. And all of these guys were, well, Miniature Misfits wasn't able to make it last year. They had a family emergency, but they were slated to last year. And then the new person we have coming is Rad Dice Gaming, who was actually at Mace, and he makes some really cool dragon egg dice holders. So that's just super cool. And then we have a couple of other special events planned. One of them is we've got a paint contest. You can check out how that paint contest is going to work in the announcements under the Coastal Con group. It's going to be kind of neat. We're going to level the playing field, have some limitations on what you can use to kind of really challenge your painting skills. And then, fingers crossed, that our buddy Sean will be able to come down from Wisconsin, and he wants to run a meat grinder
tournament. Oh, that's right. Now, yeah.
For those of you that don't know what that is, I'm not going to explain it yet because I don't want to get everyone's hopes up if we can't make it happen. But if you know what a meat grinder is, it'll be fun, and there'll be a trophy. There will be more details on that one coming soon.
And as always, if you guys have any questions about Coastal Con or any, you know, you want to get involved in stuff, feel free to reach out, send us an email, whether it's here or you can get a hold of Mac on the Coastal Con Facebook group page. He's got a lot of info for anybody that's interested in volunteering and or you know, showing up to run games or even donate, because there's going to be a raffle.
I forgot we have about 15 rule books, different game rule books.
We've got
a bunch of board games. We have there's a local artist in town who's a fantastic artist, Tanya, and she is going to be painting a picture. Don't know what it's going to be. Going to be gaming related. So no doubt going to be cool. And that's going to go in the raffle too. So that's pretty awesome. That'd be a cool thing to win.
And all those proceeds of the raffle is getting donated also. So
they are.
They are. A good cause.
That's right. They're all of the proceeds from the raffle will be donated to a local charity. Tentatively have one picked out, but going to do a little bit more research. The one I initially picked out has lots of support. So going to kind of look for somebody that maybe needs a little bit more leg up than the initial company, but we'll see. Regardless, they're going to go to something here locally in town to help out in any way that we can.
Yep. All right. Well, if you guys want to contact us, you can send us an email at indieinvasion@gmail.com. And you can check us out on Facebook, YouTube. We have lots of videos popping up with the stories that Mac's been putting out in the audio stream. Well, he's putting them up in the video stream now also. So you guys, you can watch/listen to it. You can check out what we're working on. I've been posting a lot of on our Monday nights after we work on something. We'll post it in the Facebook group, but then I've been putting it on Instagram. So you can kind of see stuff on Instagram and Twitter also. Where can they find all our podcast
episodes? Oh my goodness. Mac, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Pandora, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and of course, Podbean. Podbean is our main hosting provider for our podcast. So if you don't have Podbean on your phone or mobile device, download it because it's a pretty user-friendly interface. Check it out. Follow us on Podbean. Go over to the YouTube channel, like and subscribe. Hit that notification button on there so you can see all the cool, fun stuff that we're doing. And we can do our very best to keep you up to date on all the new indie games that we, like a bloodhound, hunt down so that we can share them with you and have way too many tabs open on our computer because we want to buy something from all of them. Sometimes the truth hurts, man. Sometimes it just hurts.
That's all right. That's all right. But thanks, you guys, for listening to another episode of Indie Invasion. And I think we're going to go ahead and get out of here and get ready for some holiday episode shenanigans, maybe.
That's right. So guys, while you are out there playing your games, having fun, buying minis, painting minis, and building terrain, and looking longingly at your pile of shame, remember to prepare yourself for the invasion. While Eric dancing us out.
Boom, baby.
High quality H2O.
Some high quality H2O. Water sucks. It really, really sucks.
This is filtered water, so.
Oh, that's good stuff.
I mean, it's no screw cap bottle water, but.
Well, you know, you can't have everything.
No. At least it's not coming from Lake Michigan right down the street from me.
Oh, is that bad? Lake Michigan?
Yeah,
bad?
I don't want that water.
No?
No. There's fish in there with three eyes. I don't want that water. You ready to jump into this?
Yes, it's your turn to bring us in.
Yes, because you're going to be carrying this conversation since my book is still shrunk-wrapped.
You need to unwrap that book. You need to unwrap that book right now. You can at least thumb through the book, talk about how pretty it is.
Oh, man. And smell it.
Yeah, smell it, dude.
That fresh print. Like, maybe that's I'm saving it for collector's item. It's a Kickstarter rule book.
That better show up.
That's good thing we can't put video in the outtakes, right? Me dancing?
We can. We can. You do know that we can. I can put that on the YouTube channel, right? That breaking down dancing.
I think the coffee kicked in because I am sweating all of a sudden.
There you go. All right. So we ready to do classic?
Yeah. Classic. Have you done watching me dance?
I don't know. I mean, you could keep rolling with the dancing. I mean, that's what you want to do.
I got the flashback music in my head. You know? That's why I was like, do.
Sweet.
That 70s disco.
Gotta have it, man. All right, here we go. Trying to think of what other games. Oh man, I've got another one for
a Phantom?
No, for classic flashback.
Oh, what do you get?
Man of War. Do you remember that?
I do.
From Games Workshop. Man, we used to play that game like mad, dude.
That still is to this day. I don't think they have a game that can really hold up to that.
Yeah, I loved that game. There's so many paper chips and stuff, but I loved that game. We played it all the time. Because we were heavily playing Warhammer Fantasy Battles as well.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's weird. There's like a fan base for that game they hound GW to, you know, reproduce it, put it back out. And I'm surprised they haven't yet, to tell you the truth.
Well, a lot of people got excited about Dreadfleet before it came out because they were thinking, okay, this is it. This is going to be the re-release that's going to be what we want it to be. This is going to be Man of War realized. And it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember hearing that.
No.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever talked about it. I didn't see anything in our notes.
What am I doing here? I just found Man of War.
Are you on eBay?
Shut up.
Because that's where I've seen it before.
Shut up. I'm not talking to you right now.
Okay.
It's in Canada too. So, you know, exchange rate. $57, 16 shipping. Oh, I would kill for that game. I can't buy it right now. Oh, man. Why am I looking at this? This one in Canada has 2 hours left on it. I'm going to watch this one.
You could watch it, but this is what I do. I watch it, and I always think to myself, well, there'll be another one out there.
There won't be. Not for this price.
Well, then what you got to ask yourself, what's wrong with it?
Nothing. I'm looking at all the pieces. The dude primed the models. That's about it. Oh, my gosh. This is super tempting. I don't know if I can resist this. This is bad. This is so bad. All right. I probably better get off and get to bed. I agree.
You got to have fun. And if you can't laugh at yourself, really, too.
And I'll laugh at you.
What kind of, yeah. I have thick skin. I've never cared about being teased and stuff.
All right. I'm ready if you are there. Right. Chuckles.
Chuckles. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Blood Bowl original 1988.
Are you on eBay again?
No.
I think you are.
No.
Would you just press that button? Just press the button. Maybe I'll press the button for you.
Okay.
Because I did look at some too.